close your eyes and pull like a dog.
And a new Irish record for Phil Healy, 22.99.
Christy Cooney hands over the Sam Maguire Cup to Graham Canty, Cork All-Ireland champions for the seventh time ever.
Hello and welcome to the Star Sport Podcast. My name is Jack McCarran of the Southern Star and I'm joined as always by Star Sport editor Kieran McCarty. Before we kick things off, just a gentle reminder as always to our listeners and our viewers to please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and YouTube. Two brilliant interviews for you on the podcast this week, which we're really excited to share with you all. Up first, we're chatting to Cork and Skibbereen footballing legend Tony Davis about his great friendship with the one and only Small Mick, who sadly passed away 23 years ago this week. Tony spoke to Kieran about the brilliance of Small Mick, both as a player and more importantly as a person. We're also crossing the Atlantic for the first time to hear from Skibbereen soccer player and coach Liam Collins. Liam has one of the most interesting sporting stories we've ever had on the podcast, including playing against the legendary Brazilian Ronaldinho, so you won't want to miss that one a little later on. So Kieran, two great chats this week, so we won't delay for too much longer. But just before we hear from Tony Davis, you've been in situ as the Star Sport editor for the best part of a decade now, and having spoken to hundreds of people, no doubt, who would have had some dealings with Small Mick in their time. So what's your own sense of the man from what you've heard down through the years?
It comes true in this interview with Tony, but Small Mick, by all accounts, was a pure character on and off the field. Like I said, I've talked to many people over the last couple of years since I've been in West Cork about Small Mick. Features with O'Donovan Ross said tributes to Small Mick over the years. And he just comes across as this larger-than-life character, transcended the sport. You know, he's very much the kind of Prince of Skibbereen. He was loved by the town, and he loved the town itself. And his best days came in the Skibbereen jersey too. Obviously, captain of the Skibbereen team that won the 1993 All-Ireland Senior Club Football Championship. And O'Donovan Ross are still the only West Cork club to ever scale that height. And it was Mick McCarthy who captained that team. And that was probably his finest day. In the drawn All-Ireland final against Aero Og of Carlow, he scored 1-8 of Skibs 1-12. And any match report you read from that game, they say he is the reason that Skibs survived that day. And went on to the replay, and the rest is history. He's a legend of O'Donovan Rossa. He's a legend in West Cork sporting circles. And that even transcended as well to the county team. He played for 6-7 seasons with the Cork seniors, won 2 All-Irelands, captained the team in 93. In the All-Ireland final against Derry. Just a magnificent man, first kind of off the field, but on the field, whoever you talk to said he was just magic. There was gold dust in his football boots. He was a match winner. He was the Skibbereen go-to man. He was their leader. He instilled a belief in that O'Donovan Rossa team that they could achieve everything, which they did. So it was great to chat to Tony Davis this week. To reminisce, I think, about Small Mick, because like you said earlier, he passed away 23 years ago this month. So it's a good time to look back and remember just how incredible a footballer Small Mick is, because he will go down in the annals of Skibbereen's greatest ever footballer. You know, it's that simple. I've talked to a couple of people about that, because that club has produced some stalwarts like Tony Davis, like John Evans, Don Davis, some superb footballers over the years, Kevin O'Dwyer, the goalkeeper. But everyone comes back to Small Mick. He was just a legend in his own lifetime. So, like I said, it was great to chat to Tony Davis about one of Skibbereen and Cork's favourite football sons. Delighted to have the great Tony Davis on the podcast this week to sort of look back and chat about one of O'Donovan Ross's greatest ever players, the late Mick McCarthy. Tony, he was a man that you soldiered with for club and county for so many years, but when you hear his name, when you hear Small Mick McCarthy, what springs to mind?
Sadness, first of all, Kieran, because I suppose he was gone too soon for everybody, his family, the general community of Skibbereen as well, because Mick encapsulated that whole spirit of what the O'Donovan Rossa Club and Skibbereen was all about. a lot of us left Skibbereen when we were 18, either going working or going to college or stuff like that. Mick loved Skib. And he actually was he carried the jersey very lightly, Kieran, because when he played with Skibbereen, you're too young, but when I was small, there was a thing called the Incredible Hulk. And it's how a fella metamorphosized from a man into a monster, into something bigger than what they were. And when Mick put on that Skib jersey, he'd arrive into the dressing room before the game and to be all joking and laughing and all, geez, you know, how's the crack? And, you know, never took training that seriously, really, you know, until there was a game in the training. But when he put on the jersey and the whistle blew, he metamorphosized into a different person completely. That's spirit, that will to win. And in there are some players that you meet in your life, Kieran, that, you know, they're on, they're full on 24/7. You, in fact, a lot of the modern athletes is all about process and living the life, and that couldn't be too far from small Mick, right? Mick loved life, loved the crack, loved pulling strokes, loved, you know, having a joke and a laugh, and, you know, never minded being centre of the joke himself, but bloody hell, he'd get you back 10 times over, right? But then when the game started, and it was a serious game where he had to deliver, he always delivered. He absolutely always delivered. There was times, and I suppose when I think now, the most famous one was the replay with Donovan Russell against Aerog in Croke Park in the first time in the All-Ireland final. We were shocking that day, really. It was Mick actually single-handedly pulled us out of that game. Sheer force of will by him, really, that he refused to give in. I don't know what he scored that day.
1-8. He scored 1-8 of your 1-8. Yeah.
Like, Kieran, ordinarily, if you were to play a challenge game tomorrow and you were told to score 1-8, but you were playing in an All-Ireland final against a team that was set up to stop him from playing, really. All right. So if you examine the opposition like everybody does, and you say, Jesus, we have to stop Mick McCarthy from scoring. If we stop him from scoring, then more than likely we'll beat these guys, right? And he scored 1-8. Like, that'll just tell you. Like, that was the winning of that All-Ireland club for Skibbereen. That and his speech at halftime in Limerick. They were the two times that I thought that, look, he just was a different person. With Cork then, he was a terrific corner forward, a really good corner forward, but I think he just was a totally different person with Skibbereen. Whatever motivated him, whatever gave him that extra madness to carry a team, he actually had it with Skibbereen, if you understand what I mean. And that's not degrading him at all with Cork. But, like, I saw him putting performances in with Cork, you wouldn't believe. Like, we've played all our, God bless us, all our life. We started school the same day. And I saw him play football that you couldn't believe, Kieran. You know, like, you watch Messi and you watch, like, Mick could do anything with a ball, really. All right? And he'd have to be motivated up, and he'd have to be into time, if you know what I mean. Like, over in training, there might be days where he'd be just missing or having a crack, right? But when it was really down to deliver, he was very good. He was a top player, Kieran. Top player. And he could have played any sport, Kieran. You know, he was really good. You know?
You were sitting there, Tony, like, he started school the same day. So, you know, whether the name Small Mick, that he's known by everyone around Skib and further beyond as Small Mick, how did that name come about?
Yeah, I suppose, God, that was a long time ago now, Kieran. And in our class, there was about Skibbereen is a small town. I suppose it was about 30 in the class, which would have been a big class around the time, right? And there was another Mick McCarthy in the class. He's still flying around Skibbereen. I often see him around. And he was Big Mick. And then there was Small Mick. And out of that class that started that day, I suppose you'd have five or six Cork minors from that class alone, Kieran. And I suppose if you go back to West Cork, back in those days, we just played. You know, we just played for fun. We loved it. We had Dermot O'Donovan, the local school teacher, who we all passed through when we were in sixth class. He was the headmaster in the school. But we had him all along. And, you know, we were doing that. And we were winning West Cork medals and stuff like that. Castlehaven were doing similar. Clan were good. Bantry were good. Bandon were good. Dunmanway were good. So we were in our own kind of little bubble playing along. And sure, none of us ever thought that our only ambition was really to play with Skibbereen. None of us ever thought to play with Cork. That was kind of unheard of, really. There was one or two lads played Cork Minor back in the day, and they were kind of, you'd know who they were and you'd look up to them. But West Cork back then, there wasn't that many Cork Minors. But the fact we played the likes of Clonakilty, Bantry, Castlehaven, Dunmanway, Bandon, and they were all pretty good. It brought us all on. So then we all went into secondary school, into St. Faulkner's. And we kind of realised then, geez, we're not too bad here, because we played other teams like Creasery and beat them and recognised teams. And then, geez, you know, we were kind of saying, maybe we're not too bad after all. You know, you just don't know the barometer of success. We hadn't a clue. And then we went on, we won Munsters and all this kind of stuff up along. And then we came to minor, and all of a sudden at 15, 16 years old, you had a gang of us playing minor with Cork, you know. And Mick was central to all this. You had a group of about 15 or 16 lads in West Cork at the time that could have played Cork minor. And I mean, the standard of Cork minor back then, like Kieran, standards are everything. And our ambition was to win an All-Ireland every year. And we probably had the capabilities to do that if things went right. And Mick was central to all that. He was central to all that. He was one of the go-to players from under 12 right up. You know, even in my mind's eye now, if I had a ball in my hand, I could actually know what he's going to do, right? I can visualize in my head. I just get the ball, I take two steps and bang, right out the wing on the outside of my foot, and I know he's gone. He's gone, and neither God nor man would stop that steps, right? He was the fastest guy over 4 or 5 yards. You couldn't believe it. Everybody knew he was going to do it. All right, nobody could stop him. He also had a kind of a sidestep with his ball, with his hand that he'd go around. Everybody knew he was going to do it, but you couldn't stop him. You know, you meet these players in life. Colin Corkey was another guy over 5 yards. Like, everyone was saying Colin was slow. Colin was the fastest guy over 5 yards I ever marked. Couldn't touch him. You could not touch him. There's no point in telling Colin to run 100 yards. You're wasting our time. Mick could make that run. And if he didn't get the ball, the hand would go up in the air, and you're going to be bloody sure he's not going to make the second run out of the thing, right? But 9 out of 10 times when he made that run, he had the ball. And if he had the ball in his hand, it's either a score or a free. 100%. You know, I'd love to... somebody to go back over his games with a stats thing now, Kieran, and just get his percentages. They're frightening. Frightening.
You know? I was chatting to Gino Driscoll before, like Gino obviously part of that Greater Dunbar Rossa team, and he was saying the game plan was so simple. Get the ball to Small Mick as fast and as often as possible. And in that 92-93 season that saw Skib go from 33 to 1 outsiders at the start of the county championship to becoming All-Ireland champions kind of however months later, like, he was so central to that team.
He was, yeah. He was, but I suppose, Kieran, you have to look at the overall picture of the players that were on that team. I think Cork were beaten early in the championship that year. I can't remember now. But then you had about six or seven Cork senior players that were either playing or fringes on the team together, if you know what I mean, concentrating on this. And you need to look too, Kieran. It was several times during that year, right? That we could have been beaten, you know. But I think sometimes your name is on it and, you know, that, you know, you're meant to do something. And that was meant to happen that year. Like even the replay against Airog above in Limerick. There was a ball that came into the square. They got a goal and it was disallowed. Not too sure, you know. You get away with these things. But I suppose, look, that's there the look you need, right? But Mick was central to the whole thing. Mick was in Skibbereen. He loved it. He was central to absolutely everything we did that year and was happier in Skibbereen. He was happiest in Skibbereen here, and actually, if you know what I mean, like, you know. But the crack he had as well and the friends he had around the place, you know, like he loved the dogs, loved the horses, loved pulling strokes and having the crack, you know. I can't tell you half the stories, Kieran, because a lot of these people are still alive and I probably end up in court or insulting somebody by telling you. But no badness or malice in it, but absolute pure crack. You know what I mean?
Like, you kind of mentioned, Tony, about that Skibbereen team. Like, it was obviously yourself, there was John Evans, Ian Breen, Gene, Dan, John Brady, Kevin Dwyer, Neville Murphy. Jesus, there were so many talented players on that team, and obviously Small Mick was there as well. And
yeah.
I suppose what you're best to remember for is you're the only West Cork team, the only West Cork club ever to win the All-Ireland Senior Club title. And you mentioned it there about the drawn replay against Éire Óg of Carlow when Small Mick got 1-8. Is it fair to say that was his greatest performance in a Skibbereen jersey?
Oh, without doubt. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, there's no doubt. No, Kieran, if I could go through from under 12 to senior, I guarantee you there's another 15 or 20 performances like that. But it's the most significant because by winning a club All-Ireland, I suppose, look, it sets it apart a little bit, okay, in that, look, it's special. It's special for that group of players and especially for Skibbereen. And look, 'twas Mick really that day above in Croke Park that did it. I remember another time, you'll have to check out the score, Kieran, because I don't know what the score was, right? But during our transition, we were winning quite a bit. So we won an All-Ireland Minor in 81. Now, Mick wasn't on it because Mick actually is a year. In November, I don't know what Mick was. Was he February or March of 65? I was November 64. But anyway, we won an All-Ireland Minor in 81. So what they did then is they integrated us into the Cork Junior team. They just felt that to be good progression for us to go on to senior. And who was training? John Fintan Daly was training the team, actually. So we had a savage team here. On that team, you had Dennis Walsh, the goalie. Right, Dennis Walsh, the fullback, he was from Middleton, a hurler. You had Conor Coonan, you had Teddy Mack, you had Danny Cullity, you had Mick, Kieran Roy. Savage team. So it was anyone that wasn't actually playing senior with their club could play junior. We were playing with Carbery at the time, senior. That was 1984, that's the first game when senior. But we went over to Coventry to play Lancashire, I think, was in an All-Ireland junior final. And there was a crowd, there was a gang from Skibbereen, the McLeans, they had their hotels and pubs and everything over. So they met us off the plane and they wined us and dined us for the night. This is the night before the game, Kieran, right? So it was a very late night, Kieran, to be quite honest with you. So I remember waking up in the morning with Mick and the game was on at whatever time it was. We had to go down and have breakfast and go to the game anyway. But Mick, there might have been a nefarious intent by the McLeans to put us off a small bit, right? But I think Mick, I think he got three goals that day. I felt sorry for the lad marking him, actually, because I'd say the boys told him that, should we were out half the night before, you know, and that he wouldn't be able to run, all right? Again, you'll have to check up what he scored that day. I think it was some sort of a record, actually, because I felt sorry for the lad marking him because he couldn't even see him, but he was flying around the place. I think he got three something that day, Kerry. It was just frightening when he scored, you know. But, you know, Mick enjoyed life. He always delivered that year, always delivered. Great crack, great fun, great sense of devilment, and you know, you would know what he'd get up to, you know.
You kind of talked there, Tony, about his scoring exploits, and I found the 1992 Kelleher Shield final against Bishoptown was played in October 1993, and Skipper 7 points down early in the second half, and legend has it that someone was saying to Mick, "Jesus, Mick, the game started 40 minutes ago. Are you going to try anything?" And then within 15 minutes, he scored 4 goals. And they said it just summed them up. Skib scored 4-5 that day to win the Kelleher Shield final, and Small Mick scored 4-4. It's an incredible tally.
But that's the type of person he was. And you know what? He lived, if he worked somebody heat map on the pitch, right, where there the D is now, I'd say he never moved outside the D. Never. Just a little bit maybe to get initial possession. But a little bit, I'd say that was his area. And you said it earlier on, Kieran, right? No hopper solo, no Messi. Get the ball and deliver it as quickly and accurately to him. And if he gets in his hand, that's it. Everybody else often, Kieran, then, is a support structure insofar as if he can't do anything with it, then he'll give it to someone else, right? But in real terms, somebody fouled him or... You know, and his record from frees was unbelievable. You know, it really was. Top player in all levels, you know. And like, it's hard, like at top level sport, Kieran, and particularly in Gaelic football and hurling nowadays, you get 1 year free. So you come on the scene and you do really well, right? So from then on, you're a marked man. It's from then on you're judged. So Mick was always marked, and doubly marked and triply marked when Skibbereen were playing, because they knew well if you could mark him, you'd probably beat him, all right? And yet he still got all those scores, you know? So that's probably the essence of him. Should have always found us hanging out with him, you know? That's just the way it is, you know?
You said, like, his greatest moments in the Skibbereen jersey, but his Cork career wasn't half bad either. He came off the bench in the 89 final, got a couple of fights against Mayo, started very well against Meath, I think, in 1990 before he went off injured. So there's still big moments from him in a Cork jersey too over the years.
Ah, sure, look, he could have done it on any stage, Kieran. All he needed was possession. And he had an unerring sense of where the goal was. You know, his return from possession was frightening. And I can still see him getting those balls. I can see him doing the sidestep. You could read it a mile off. And again, all you had to do was get the ball to him. You know, I can remember him in 89 when we beat Mayo on the All-Ireland final. The relief, because that's what it was. After all the years trying, it was relief rather than any other feeling. And I remember coming off the field with Mick that day, and we were saying, "Jesus, thanks for the Jesus, we won that anyway," you know, which was more relief than anything, Kieran. Do you know what I mean? So football was a big part of his life, but quite a large part of his life was outside the game. It could have been like the coursing or the dogs or horses or stuff like that. You should talk to John Terry a bit about that. John would know a little bit more about that than I would, Kieran, right? But John and himself were great friends, and Asher, they got up to some crack, the two of them, you know, back down the years.
Well, it seems like he was an absolutely incredible footballer, but an incredible man too. Can you hear that, by the way? Even now, people are speaking so kindly and fondly of Small Mick. So thanks, Tony. Thank you so much for coming on to join us to talk about Small Mick. But just to check in with you now, how is life treating you right now?
And that's about Kieran, like everybody else, I'm not going too far. Small bit of training, that's it, basically, like everybody is. Looking forward to the summer, but today is Monday, so we had rugby and soccer for the weekend. That kind of kept me going. I love all sports, absolutely everybody, every sport that's there. So thanks be to God for that. Other than that, you go off your game, Kieran, to be honest with you, you know. So just hang in there. I suppose the summer is coming and I see football now. The GA is put off now till when? Is it April?
We're saying that, yeah.
April. So hopefully it will start up in April again. I thought they got it wrong, actually. I thought they should have started the club competition first. And the latter part of the year, then hopefully maybe people can go to games. And, you know, so they're not going to do that as far as I know. They're going to start with the inter-county. And we see where we go from there. But I suppose it's something to look forward to, Kieran. You know, it's not a great time of the year. The January was a disaster with the weather and stuff. But should we have something to look forward to, Kieran?
Because you were involved with Donal Rossa last year, yeah. Tony, and you saw how well that club window worked, and then the inter-county was yeah. played after, and club players, every player absolutely loved that defined club window, and then the inter-county, like I said there, was played after their club. Should he even look now again at maybe doing something like that again? Because it worked so well last year, and the way the GA season could pan out, maybe it's an idea to get club players out there first and get them playing again.
Well, I think that's what should have been done. It should have been done earlier. I'm not sure with the restrictions that are in place now with the 5K that it can be done now. If the restrictions weren't in place, then I think they should look at running the club off first. There's a very small amount of people playing inter-county football, hurling, boys and girls. The majority of the GAA's club, and that should always be first. So that should always be the most important part of the GA. I think that's actually happening. I think there's a change in mindset now. It's swinging back in favour of the club as far as I can see. And it would be easier to play the club championship this time from once the restriction eases. Get everybody back up to playing to a level. The club championship finishes or take it to a stage where you're in the semi-finals or something like that. So everybody has a meaningful season. And then go and play your inter-county. It means then the county players then as well are up to speed. They're not picking up injuries. You know, they're in good form. And it would be later in the year where hopefully crowds could go to the end. I'm hoping September, October next year that crowds will hopefully at that stage with all the vaccines and hopefully all the infection rate will be down, that we'll be able to go to games and it will mean a few quid for the GA as well, which is vital, you know. Hopefully. You saw last year, Karen, they were very strict. Mm-hmm. Very strict. In fact, for all the games last year, I didn't go inside the war at all for any of the games because there was only a few selectors allowed inside. I'm happy enough up in the hill anyway because you have a better view of the game, you know, than on the level. But they were very, very strict at the gates. And that's all over the county. Very strict. And rightly so.
Hopefully in the next couple of months that we'll get to the situation where the club players will get back out playing, Tony, because they haven't played now in 6-7 months and it's a long time. And there's obviously like every inter-county player is a club player anyway. So I think it makes sense. Get the club players out there first, get them playing again and run the inter-county off after. But I think we have to wait and see what the powers that be think about that. But Tony, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
You're very welcome, Kieran. And the best of luck.
Take care, Tony. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.
Now, Kieran, for the first time ever in Star Sport Podcast history, we're going across the Atlantic to the United States. To talk to a Skibbereen soccer player who undoubtedly has one of the most interesting sporting backstories that we've ever covered on this podcast. This is a man who left Skibbereen, left Cork, left Ireland and went to follow his footballing/soccer dreams in the United States. And it eventually led to him sharing the field with the one and only Ronaldinho. So before we hear from Liam Collins, what can you tell us about him?
That was an incredible story that we carried in last week's Southern Star. Joe McCarthy got in touch with Liam just for us to check up how things are going in the States. And Liam regaled him of the time that he captained the international team against a team of ex-Brazilian players that was led by Ronaldinho, which is incredible to think a young fella who left these shores back in 2010, a young Skibbereen lad, was captaining a team against one of the greats of the game, like an absolute legend. Ronaldinho is a great story. So as soon as I saw that piece by Joe, I was straight on to Liam. I said, you have to come on the podcast. I said, I want to hear the story. I want to hear your story about when you left Skibbereen to go to America and you're still there, what, 11 years later. Football has been so good to him. It gave him the opportunity to go to the States on a scholarship. He's now teaching over there. He met his wife through football as well. He was telling me his life is over there now. He's coaching, he's teaching, he's still playing away at the weekend. So an incredible story to think that a Skibbereen man went up against Ronaldinho. And there's clips to prove it too. I sourced a couple of clips on YouTube and Twitter. So incredible story, like I said. And there's nobody listen to me anymore. I think it's time to talk to the main man, Liam Collins, as he regales us of his adventures in the States so far. For the first time now, the Star Sport podcast has gone across the Atlantic and all the way over to America, and in particular to a town 25 minutes outside St. Louis to chat to Skibbereen's own Liam Collins. Welcome to the podcast, Liam.
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
We had an interview with Liam in last week's Southern Star when Ger McCarthy caught up with Liam. And what grabbed my attention from that piece was the start of Ger's interview with you when he spoke about the time you played against Ronaldinho. And straight away in my head, it was like, wow, here's a Skibbereen man who went to America back in 2010 and he captained a team against Ronaldinho. So before we chat soccer in America and life over in the States and your journey and adventure in America, take me back to 2017. So that exhibition game, you were captain of Inter Nashville and you were taking on a team of ex-Brazilians who were captained by Ronaldinho, who we all know is a world superstar, one of the great Brazilian footballers of our time, of all time. So how did that all come about, Liam?
Well, I'm not sure how the actual game came about, but the owner of the club that I played for had some connection somehow to Ronaldinho. I don't know, was it through his brother or through an agent or something? And they figured out, I guess, the pay package for him, and they paid him quite a bit of money to come in for the weekend and play an exhibition game. And he brought, I think there was about five ex-pros with him and then five just friends, I guess, and just played an exhibition game. They sold tickets for it, tried to kind of make it a big event. He was in town. It was in Nashville, so he got to see the Titans, met the Tennessee Titans, the NFL team and stuff like that. So they kind of sold him this, I guess, obviously a bit of money to make, but a good weekend to see the NFL, to do things like that in Nashville. And obviously the highlight then for us was having that exhibition game. It was, like you said, kind of surreal, walking out next to someone who's a Ballon d'Or winner. Someone, when I was growing up, was probably the best player that there was, because this was before Ronaldo and Messi. So it was super surreal. So just a connection between the owner at the club and someone that knew Ronaldinho, and that's kind of how it came about. And then when they agreed on, I guess, a fee for him to come into town, that's when it was kind of finalized.
The beauty of the internet means that there's clips of this out there, and I was watching a clip of you walking out as captain of Inter Nashville, and right beside you was Ronaldinho. Like, even for that alone, like, that's like, we've mentioned the word surreal already, but to walk out alongside Ronaldinho, both of you as captains for an exhibition game, like, that's something, that's it's magic. Like, that's a tell your grandkids moment kind of years down the line.
It was very, very cool. We spoke a few words. He had very kind of broken English, but got to speak a little bit with him, got to, you know, shake his hands at the coin toss at the start of the game and exchange kind of pleasantries that way. So it was, yeah, one of those things that kind of probably flew by at the time. And then when you look back at it, it's like, Jesus, was actually Ronaldinho that was on the field next to me and not just some other kind of normal opponent that you're playing with. So it was a very cool experience.
How was it like in the game itself? Did you see those famous Samba skills?
He kind of trotted around a little bit, but there was one part of the game, all right, where he just turned up the gears a little bit and just went past three or four fellas like they weren't even there. So once in the game, you could just see he got it kind of deeper in midfield and just turned and just went up through the gears quickly. And he was out of shape and not anywhere near the fitness he would have been back when he was at the top, but he still was able to just go past players like they weren't even there in that one instance.
And there was a couple of more kind of well-known Brazilian players too. I think Cleberson, former Man United player, was there, and Marcelo, ex-Real Madrid. So, like, that was a star-packed Brazilian team that came to town that day.
Yeah, it was Cleberson. Got to talk to him for a little bit. And Emerson, that was, I think it was AC Milan and Real Madrid as well. He played. Cleberson was still very, very fit, because I think he was just maybe finished playing in America or still maybe playing somewhere in America. So he was still fit and able to get around. Emerson was a little older, but and there's two other fellas, one that I think played for Fiorentina. I don't know, don't remember his name, but they had about five players that had been at top clubs in Europe.
And we just said there, like, you shared the pitch with Ronaldinho, Cleberson, Marcelo. Let's go back to earlier days when you shared the pitch with the likes of Don Loc Hodnett, Rob McCarthy, Ryan Price, these fellas. Take me back to those under 12, under 14, under 16 days of Skibbereen, because I was talking to Ryan Price last year and he was telling me that Skib team cleaned up all before them.
Yeah, we had a very good team starting off kind of under 12 in the West Cork League. Who did we have up front? David Shannon and then Alan Holland just couldn't stop scoring. And then Ryan in goal and Rob McCarthy, Richard Hodnett, Don Loc. Who else was in that team? Lad, it was very, very strong team. Yeah, we did really. It was seemed to be always at those times ourselves and Riverside were the big kind of derby games, I guess. And who would have been Gary Toomey at Riverside? He was a very good soccer player in those days, under 12s and 13s and 14s. He would have been probably the best player in West Cork, easy, if not the best player in Cork at those age groups. So it was always seemed to be ourselves kind of going against Riverside.
Like some great memories from then. And that was kind of the start of your soccer career. And it eventually took you across to the States under scholarship. But go back again to those younger days, Liam. Was soccer always your first love?
I'd say it was, yeah. I played Gaelic football and I played hurling as well. I was all right at them. We won a county at minor with O'Donovan Rasa, and that was probably my last real competitive Gaelic football, was playing that minor team that we won the county. I played a little bit maybe of junior and maybe under 21 stuff after that, but kind of inconsistent. I think that minor team was the last time I really played competitive GAA hurling, probably maybe under 16 or something like that. But soccer, well, yeah, for me, was always kind of number one growing up, yeah.
And then obviously Cork City came calling, and you were a couple of great years with Cork City. What are the standout memories for you from that time?
Well, we won the Youth Cup, which is the biggest one for my time when I was there. We won the under 18 Youth Cup in Turner's Cross as well against was it Salt Hill Devon, I think it was, that time. So that would have been the highlight. But all of them were good. I got to play a few first-team games under Roddy Collins right before the club went bankrupt, or right before the club folded. I think that was January 2010. I played five or six pre-season games under Roddy Collins. So that was nice to kind of be involved with the first team. Obviously, it went bankrupt right around that time, or folded, and it changed into Forest then a few months after. But the Youth Cup would definitely be the highlight of that time.
And it was around in Tulum, wasn't it? You got the offer of the scholarship to go across to the States. I think that was to the University of Memphis, if I'm right. How big a decision was that first for you? Like, you were still so young to decide to leave home, to leave West Cork, leave Skib and your family and friends to pursue your dream and your goal in the States.
Yeah, and it was, I guess at the time, wasn't something, if you asked, oh, would you be there in 5 years or 10 years? It wasn't any of that. I was looking more immediate, and if I liked it, I'd stay on, and if I hated it, I could come home at Christmas time kind of thing. It was one of those things that it came about right. It was, yeah, probably January to March, maybe 2010, around that time frame it came about, because I remember there was issues with trying to sign back with Cork City or taking the scholarship offer, and I was actually in Stefanefa at the time, and with Liam Murphy and Paddy Gleeson, who were in charge of the kind of soccer side of Stefanefa, and they were fairly straightforward with me, saying that there'd be more opportunities playing League of Ireland if it didn't work out and stuff like that. So take this, and my parents as well kind of saying, look, just take this opportunity, and if you don't like it, you can always come home kind of thing. So it was one of those kind of things, maybe taking just a jump at it to try it, and if it worked out, great. If it didn't work out, well, at least I kind of tried it. And but having done it, I'd do it all again anyway. It's something that I'd advise any person, unless you're, you know, cracking into making academies or making it in England, or you're definitely getting into the League of Ireland. If you're right on those fringes, I would say to any young fella that's on the kind of fringes, maybe not sure if they're going to get into, just take a look at it. And if you don't like it, you can come home at Christmas time, and then you can start in the League of Ireland the following year. Or, but no, it's something that I'm delighted I took the step into doing that time.
And it kickstarted an incredible adventure that's still ongoing right now. And when you moved over to the University of Memphis Forest, what was the kind of the big change for you? What was so different at home? Did anything kind of stand out apart from the American accent and just the different culture? What was the big change for you?
Not being able to walk everywhere was a massive change. You know, when you come from a small town like Skibb, you can walk to training, you can walk to town, you can do all that stuff. But even for us, we like trained a couple of miles from where I lived, but played was like 12 miles from where we lived and stuff like that. So there was trying to find a car and being broke that first year and trying to find someone to give you a lift to trainings and all that kind of stuff was definitely a shock. And then the culture and going from Skibb to a city like Memphis that's got, I don't know, probably a million people in it, was a big shift. And then kind of getting used to how big university sports are in the US. It is basically kind of a professional level, but not obviously being paid, but how much money goes into it, how much TV stuff goes into it. Just being a part, I guess, of a university team and not realizing how big it is definitely took kind of a bit of time to get used to, you know, seeing your games on the television and seeing your games in different places like that. Just playing college seemed like kind of out of this world at that time. So that took a little bit of time to get used to.
In fairness, Dave, you kind of hit the ground running. I was looking at a couple of stats there. I think you led in assists every year for 4 years at the University of Memphis. You got on the all ACC conference winner and in your sophomore year, your junior year, and your senior year as well. So it's fair to say that you took your skill and talent from Skibbereen and West Cork. It transcended the Atlantic, and you were able to show how good you are across the water as well. So standard wise, you fit it in straight away as well.
Yeah, and it was, the physicality of it took, I'm a smaller fella, and the physicality took a little bit of getting used to at first. But once I kind of figured out that you'd play a little bit quicker and things like that, it didn't take too long to settle in. The physicality would have been the biggest difference. Big, strong, athletic players that you're coming against kind of was the biggest, adjusting factor that I had to try and get used to. But once you kind of overcome that aspect of the game, it was okay. The standard was good. The Division One college level that I played at, it's a good, very good standard. I'd say, you know, UCD, UCC, teams like that at home would compete, but it's a good level, yeah. It's a good standard.
Talk me through the steps in, because you went to Nashville FC and you went up along the kind of rungs as well. So from your college days, and we'll chat to soccer now, the different steps that you took, is you got to a fairly high level over. You got to, was it the third tier down from the top level over in America? So talk me through that, Liam.
And it would have stemmed from playing in college and doing well in college and kind of getting your name out that way and teams looking for players out of college. So I played all over the place. I played in Toronto for a couple of seasons in Canada. I played at DC United for a summer. And it was just kind of off of college seasons, you know, people seeing you on different games that are on television and people getting in touch with your coaches and stuff like that, trying to figure out what you were doing after school and what you were doing kind of moving forward. So it would came off college mostly. If you do well in college and get enough kind of exposure, then teams seem to start kind of knocking on your door a little bit, I guess. But yeah, it would have been off the college scene, really, is where people would have seen you first.
You had a very good time with Internashville, like, and that was in the semi-pro league, I think. Like I was saying there, it's kind of the third tier in the US soccer pyramid. And 2017 kind of stands out, I think, as a season. It was very memorable for you, Liam. You won the South Eastern Conference and you got to the national quarterfinal as well. And you were telling me before that you were unlucky to go further. Kind of obviously great memories from that season you must have. Because you were named on the 2017 NPSL Team of the Year too. So when you consider that there was 100 teams in that league, I think that's an incredible achievement for you on a personal level.
Yeah, and that team was just one of those teams that seemed to click. If you asked us before the season, we'd have probably told you we wouldn't have won 5 games. And then we just started rolling. We started winning games and upsetting teams. And it just went really well. How we played on a personal level really suited me. We wanted to try and get it down and try and play through teams, which can be sometimes a little different than what a lot of teams try and do at that level, where it's just get it forward as quick as you can and kind of build off of that. But really suited me. And like I said, we just kind of started on this roll of winning games. Sometimes we wouldn't be playing the best and we'd pull out a win, or sometimes we'd shock teams early on and we'd be up 2 or 3 after 20 minutes. But it was just one of those things. Everyone seemed to click that summer. The team chemistry was great and the wins just started to keep on coming. And like you said, we probably could have gotten a little bit further, but we won the conference, which was the first time that club had done it, and then got as far as the quarterfinal. So that was just a super experience. And winning that conference down in New Orleans against New Orleans in the final as well was a good experience. And having a night or two out in New Orleans then after winning it was a great experience.
I was going to say, New Orleans strikes me as very much a party town, so probably good memories from that weekend as well.
Yeah, it took about a week to get over, I think, after winning that conference down there that time.
Like, you were still, probably mid-20s and still, like, kind of the best was yet to come out of you, because thinking so, MSL, was that ever in your thoughts then, okay, I'm doing quite well here, let's just take this on a bit further, because you had trials with St. Louis back in 2016 that didn't work out, but was it ever in your head then, Liam, to say, let's see how far I can get to the top level over here in America?
Yeah, I spent the summer at DC United and I trained a few times with the first team and just played with the reserves, and it never really went any further than that. And then I was looking to move up to St. Louis, so trialed for about 2 weeks with the team in St. Louis. And I think if I actually hadn't been an international, that would have worked out. But at the time, I wasn't a permanent resident. I needed a visa, and the leagues didn't. I don't know if it's still the same, but then it was you could only have 8 international spots on a squad. So just didn't want to use one of those on someone who hadn't been in the league, didn't have that experience of playing in that league, which was fine. I completely understand that. So that never worked out. So after the St. Louis one, then I just kind of knocked around the semi-pro. I didn't really look to push on after that. I tried kind of finding a career, I guess, and something that I could do for the rest of my life and the rest of my working life, rather than kind of chase around. I'm sure if I went on trial different places, I could have got in somewhere, but I was looking to try and settle in St. Louis. So once that team didn't work out, then I just kind of started looking at careers that would allow me to play during the summer as well, with semi-pro stuff and things like that. So yeah, that's kind of the route I took after that.
You found a career in teaching then, Liam. And was it around then, I suppose, as well, that you were thinking America might become your home for the foreseeable future? Kind of like, had you ever the option to come back home to West Cork, or were you just so happy with life in America? You said, I'm going to just kind of just stay here and just see what happens.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit of both. When I was just finishing up at Memphis, I was in contact a little bit with John Caulfield about coming back very briefly, just over emails and stuff like that, and getting international clearance ahead of coming back and things like that, but that never really got too serious. It was only a few emails kind of back and forth, so nothing too serious. So then I had, at the time, finishing school, a serious girlfriend here, who's now my wife. So I had that aspect too of it. So I was really enjoying myself here and never really seriously looked into coming back home too much.
So it's the teaching, kind of career and teaching path that you followed, so was it?
Yep. 2017, I was in college coaching while I was in Nashville playing with international. So I had done the 3 years of college coaching, which allowed you as well then to play kind of semi-pro. You could train the evenings, you could travel for the games and stuff. So I was doing that from 2014 to 2017. And then I was looking just to try and move up to St. Louis. So I trialed with the St. Louis team, which would have been in the tier just below the MLS. And that didn't work out. So then I was just looking for career jobs, I guess. And luckily, being through college and having my degrees and stuff, teaching was an option. So I eventually kind of found my way into teaching.
And you mentioned coaching as well. I was very interested in your coaching career because you were in, was it the Missouri Military Academy for a couple of years as a head varsity soccer coach there? And now you're in, is it Francis Howell North in St. Charles, Missouri as a teacher, and you coached kind of the high school girls and boys teams there as well. So is coaching a passion of yours as well, Liam?
Yeah, I you know, it's as close as I can get to really to playing, and if you can kind of pass anything on that you might know or help anyone out, whether it's maybe trying to get kids over here into college teams and things like that, then it's nice to see. And it gets me around the game. I can train, you know, a few times a week with them still, and you know, watch the games then and stuff like that. So it helps in the classroom too. If you go watch your the students are teaching in the classroom, you watch their games at night, then that gives you something kind of in common with those as well. So it gives you a few less headaches in the classroom as well.
And tell me a bit about your time with Missouri Military Academy. I said that was probably surreal again to kind of coaching and teaching in a school like that.
Yeah, that was a culture shock for sure. Yeah, I was just looking for teaching jobs in the area, and just that was the one that suited the degree I had, and there was a soccer position available there. I just jumped at it when I had the opportunity, and it's a surreal environment. All right, kids are wearing basically military uniforms going to school, and it's very kind of regimented what they do. I didn't have any kind of involvement with the military aspect. I just was in the classroom and then on the pitch after school for trainings. But there's kind of a military aspect to the school too, that makes sure they're, I guess, marching correctly and all of that kind of stuff. So seeing that definitely took some getting used to, seeing as I don't have any experience with any of that besides being at that school.
I'd say that's an entirely different world to when you're in school yourself back home in Skip, was it?
Yeah, well, some of us probably needed it.
And then, like I said, now you're in Francis Howell North in St. Charles, Missouri. How is life there now? You said you're teaching and you're coaching. Kind of, what's life like in the States right now? We're obviously kind of post-election, so the Joe Biden era has started over there. Kind of, is it what's that been like, the first month or so, Joe Biden?
Like I was saying to Joe when I was talking to him, on a personal level for me, it hasn't really had any impact yet. I guess the only thing you don't really see is the maybe crazy headlines that you would have seen in the previous administration. So far, I guess it's been quieter in terms of headlines, but on a personal level yet anyway, it hasn't made too much impact on me at my level. So all good so far with Biden.
And even, I suppose, kind of it's the global story the last 11 months or so. But the pandemic in America, we've seen the headlines over here, and you've probably seen the headlines in America, what life is like in Ireland right now. But how is life where you are right now, kind of in terms of movement and so on? Are you restricted much? Is it like back home in West Cork, or is it a lot more, have you more freedom to move around?
It's definitely more lenient over here. Looking at home, it's much more kind of mandatory lockdowns and much stricter. Whereas here, there was a lot of pushback to kind of mandatory masks and mandatory rules, basically. So a lot of the stuff is more advised or recommended that you do this and you do that. There's not really going to be any fines or anything like that. But restaurants and bars and stuff, they're open for the most part. You just have to try and social distance. You have to wear your mask going into most places. But there's no, I guess, top-down enforcement of any of it, really. It is definitely more kind of, you should do this because it's good for everyone, rather than you have to do this kind of. So then that leads to, you know, lots of people not doing it and people doing their own thing. So it's a more lenient approach, whether that's right or wrong, I guess. I don't know. I guess we'll see how the next few months pans out with him rolling out the vaccines and things like that. So hopefully they can kind of get a handle of it soon.
And like I mentioned there, you're teaching and coaching still. Are you still playing, Dion?
Yeah, I'm playing no more, just for enjoyment. Even though I might look at playing again this summer, but I'm not 100% sure yet. I'll have to see how the fitness is. But I play in an indoor league a couple of nights during the week, and then on Sundays there's a Sunday league that I play in as well. But that's more just kind of for fun at this stage. But that's been stalled now for the winter period. That actually stops over here from about November to March, just because of how cold it gets. So right now I'm just playing indoor a couple of nights of the week at the moment, but Sunday league, then hopefully back up in March again, and then potentially the summer, but I'm not too decided yet if I'm playing.
It's like you obviously have your feet firmly rooted in America right now. So I presume that dashes any hopes of Skibbereen kind of getting you back in to help the promotion push up to the Premier Division.
No, I don't think my wife would like me trying to move back to get Skib back to the Premiership. But hopefully they can. Yeah, this season coming, or as soon as possible, because the club of that size and with the facilities and stuff like that should be playing in the highest level in West Cork.
And I presume over the years too, there's been no shortage of Skibbereen lads or fellas from home kind of inviting themselves over to America to spend a bit of time with you and soak up the American culture.
I've had a few. A lot of them came over. It was great for my wedding in summer 2019. There was, you know, 15 or 16 of the lads, that some of the lads we'd already talked about, and other lads that I'm good friends with. So that was a great experience, having them over for 2 weeks. And my brother actually works over here, Mark. No, he's been working here for the last year and a half now. So he's at the military academy currently. He's a business teacher and he coaches the soccer team there now. That I'm gone. So he's only an hour down the road. So he calls up a lot of weekends when, you know, if he's got nothing else going on, he'll call up to our place here. And so he's there. And yeah, there's been a few over the years. It is definitely nice seeing people from home, especially with the pandemic. No, I was initially supposed to go home last summer and that got cancelled. And I had rescheduled to this summer, and that probably won't happen again either. So it'll be since 2018, I think, was the last time I was back in Skib. So it's been a while now, right?
And when, I suppose, when the leagues do get back running here, and even before when the leagues were up and running, would you always keep an eye out for how Skib are doing in the West Cork League and how O'Donovan Ross are doing in the Football Championship?
Oh yeah, always. I talk to, you know, all the lads that we mentioned kind of already that are playing, in WhatsApp groups and things like that. So I'd always be chatting to them at how they're thinking they're going to do this season and what the kind of outlook is looking for them. So yeah, I'd always keep up on it, and hopefully someday they can pull off a county with O'Donovan Rasa. And if they do, I'll be back for that celebration anyway, no matter what time of the year it is.
Oh, great stuff. No, absolutely pleasure to talk to you, Liam. Thank you so much for chatting to us and filling us in on your adventure in the States. Hopefully we'll see you back in Skib before too long, that things will settle down and you'll get to spend a bit of time back home as well. But until then, thanks, Liam, and best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.
Welcome back to the Star Sport Podcast, and before we wrap up, as always, we're going to do a quick preview of what's to come in this week's Southern Star Sports section. And Kieran, I know you've done a deep dive on one of Cork's top ladies footballers this week, so that's one I'm excited to read. What can you tell us about it at this stage?
Yeah, it's a two-page feature on Kinsale and Cork footballer Orla Finn, who was a two-time All-Star, and she's one of the leading lights of Cork ladies football for the best part of a decade. So what I've done, I've charted Orla's career from the very start, from her debut in the Skeena Skull for Summer Cove National School back when she was a nine-year-old in third class, to where she is now, like I said, one of the best, most lethal forwards in the game. And I've told her story by chatting to the people who've been around her from the very start. So from her national school teacher, to Charlie McLaughlin, who coached her under 14 and under 16, to Aisling Judge, who's her Kinsale teammate. And Aisling was telling me that she's played with Orla longer than any other footballer because they started together in secondary school and they've come up through the ranks together. I was talking to the Kinsale ladies manager, Micheál O'Connor, about her. Talked to Orla herself and caught up with her dad, Ger Finn, just to piece together this jigsaw that tells the story of a quite young girl, Jack, who back when she was 13 wanted to give up football. She was, by her own account, she was very quiet, she was very shy. She was in the Cork under 14 panel, but she didn't want to go to training. She was just, like I said, a very shy person. But her parents, Ger and Eileen, were great rocks and great sources of encouragement. They told her, keep at it. Charlie McLaughlin, who was her trainer, convinced her, Orla, stay at it. She did, and she went on to win under 14 All-Irelands, under 16, under 21, six senior, an incredible forward, an incredible player. So it's well worth the read in Thursday Southern Star. It is the highlight of this week's sports section.
And just tell us about the clip that you tweeted out earlier today, where you sourced it, and maybe describe it for listeners. And just for listeners who are wondering what I'm talking about, head over to Kieran's Twitter account, which, what's your handle? KieranMac_SS, is it?
That's the one, at KieranMac_SS. So what this is probably the first footage of Orla Finn in action. And like I mentioned earlier, about she started off playing football with Summer Cove National School in the Skeena Skull. So thanks to Kinsale GA Club, and thanks to her teacher, Rose O'Regan from Summer Cove, I got my hands on this clip. So it shows Orla coming on as a sub in the 2001 Skeena Skull decider against Ballinadee. Orla was only 9 years old at the time. She was in third class, but she played without fear. They put her into the attack. You can see her getting on the ball straight away. She was showing for the ball. She showed that burst of speed that we now associate with her. And she got a super goal at the end that sealed a 3-2.
Just to do a bit of analysis on the clip, she looks head and shoulders above most of the other players on the field. And as you say, she was only in third class, and most of the girls are 2 and 3 heads taller than her. But she's getting out in front of her marker, catching high balls coming in, dropping the shoulder, turning, and she was in third class. So, like, I'm not going to say I could tell that she was going to be brilliant, because obviously I know the context. She did go on to be a two-time All-Star, as you say, but looking at it there and knowing what she went on to achieve, you can definitely see that bit of magic that she had just from that short one-minute clip.
I'm 100% Jack, and like, she went from strength to strength after that. I won't say too much because it's obviously in this week's Southern Star, but from that super sub performance, like, what she's gone on to become since is incredible. And it's how she carries herself as well. Anyone that knows Orla Finn knows she's not one for the limelight. She doesn't want to kind of stand center stage. She's very much a team player. She's a fantastic role model for any ladies footballer, whether it's Kinsale, West Cork, right across the country. She's a terrific ambassador too for West Cork and for Kinsale. And one of my favourite pieces of this feature is I caught up with Owen Nation, who was an Ebor Rangers footballer, Cork under 20. I think he was a Cork minor as well. And a couple of years back, he had to mark Orla in a challenge game. And I'm not going to give away too much, but Owen lets us in what it was like to mark Orla Finn. And it's a game he remembers, let's put it like that. So pick up Thursday Southern Star and sit back, relax, and enjoy reading about one of the greats of Cork ladies football. Like I said, two-time All-Star, six-time All-Ireland winner, and just an all-round fantastic person and footballer.
Lovely stuff, Kieran. Anything else you want to flag up in this week's sports section before we wrap up?
Yeah, we have a nice interview with Sandra O'Donoghue. She's from Roscarbery. She's the 17-year-old who won the LGFA Young Volunteer of the Year Award. And she was presented with that at a virtual ceremony last Friday evening. So Ger McCarthy has caught up with her. Also, we've caught up with five Carbery senior football managers, from James McCarthy in Castlehaven, Declan Dwyer in Dawnies, JJDC, who's manager of the Clonakilty Ladies, Martin Bohan of O'Donovan Rossa and Declan Hayes of Carbery Rangers, just to get their thoughts on what they think should happen with the GAA season ahead. Should Intercounty still go first ahead of club? Should club actually be put ahead of Intercounty like last year? We don't know what's going to happen right now. So we got the thoughts of five local football managers who fill us in what they think should happen. Lovely motorsport piece too. Martin Walsh has caught up with Sean Hurley from Glengariff to tell his motorsport and rallying story. So there's a great read in that.
Just a shout out to Martin Walsh and his West motorsport piece, Kieran. Sorry to cut across you. Martin Walsh has been doing some amazing work on the motorsport pages over the last, well, for years and years, but especially during the pandemic. He hasn't rested on his laurels. Just knocking out brilliant piece after brilliant piece. So I'd urge anyone to make sure to, even if you're not interested in motorsport, which I wouldn't be at all, but I still read Martin's pieces every week because they're just brilliantly written, really interesting, and you learn so much about West Cork and the history it has at rallying. So I would just urge anyone who hasn't taken to reading Martin's motorsport pieces yet, do yourself a favour and take a look.
I 100% agree with you, Jack. I think what the last 11 months have allowed people is to kind of to dip into their box of ideas, and Martin's one of the best in the business at that. He's knocked it out of the park every week. Well, since the motorsport column came online with the Southern Star all those years ago, but especially in the last 11 months, I feel, because he's telling the stories of so many characters and people involved in West Cork motorsport. And maybe in a normal run of things, if we were living in normal times, we wouldn't have the chance to delve into these stories and tell these people's stories. But we do now, and they're brilliant stuff. And this week again of Sean Hurley and Glengariff is a brilliant, brilliant read. So I'd recommend that. So there's a lot in this week's Southern Star Sports section again, Jack.
Brilliant stuff. And of course, it will be available to purchase in shops across West Cork and beyond from Thursday morning. And if you can't get to the shops, you can always subscribe online. Just go to www.southernstar.ie/epaper and you can subscribe to the Southern Star Digital Edition for less than €2 per week. Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week. If you enjoy these shows, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Slán tomall.